The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by YouTube TV. Try it free today at youtube.com/NBA23. New users only. Terms apply. Cancel anytime. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is that time of week where we have a guest join us. Check out his columns at Yahoo Sports, but be sure to check out The Good Word with Vincent Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Podcast episodes drop on Monday. Vinny Goodwill, what's going on?
I don't think I've ever heard you actually say my birth name before.
I say, you see how quick I got off that too, didn't you? I was like, I figured that's the name of the podcast, so I'm going to say it right so people can find it, but I don't know who the hell Vincent is. I thought that was your daddy.
That is my daddy, and he ain't got no podcast or hair.
Dog, I tell you, man, that's the thing, though, with you. You got, like, 3 days with 3 sets of people, and I asked you which one to go with, and you, like, go with whatever. I'm like, all right, fine, then. You just going to be everything to everybody.
That's the thing, and we've gone over this before, but it's hilarious, the people that will call me Vincent, and I'm like, oh, y'all have no idea who the hell I am. I have no level of familiarity with you at all. Like, people in the league were laughing at my lanyard. They were like, who's Vincent Goodwill? Like, we should change that. I'm like, no, the hell you shouldn't. I don't want random people calling me by my common name. Y'all tripping.
Now, I know on me, like, when the game is flipped up on something, when somebody goes from calling me Bo to Bomani, I'm like, ah. Things apparently have changed here. Like, I have never, like, for me, and I don't know how that, I imagine this probably goes the same for you with your parents. No one in my family that I like has ever called me Bomani, except to be facetious. And in fact, people I don't like only do it to make sure that everybody knows that I don't like them. Like, or they don't like me. Like, I remember at one point, as I was getting, you know, older in, like, later teenage years, my aunt and her son started calling me Bomani, and I had to look at him and be like, nah, this isn't one of those situations.
Yeah, look, well, the one person who will call me by my birth name is my sister when she's trying to get my, like, attention, or she's trying to get under my skin. You know what I mean? And me and my sister like each other. You know what I mean? But we needle each other. And, you know, you have an older sister, but it's a little different dynamic.
Yeah.
With my sister, she's Shani. When it's anything else, it's Chantel. You know what I mean? So then when you hear the inflection in the voice, and then it's Vincent, I'm like, all right, man, what do you want now? Like, that's like, the point right that now. It's at. And my grandmother, my late grandmother, would call me first and middle name when she really wanted to get my attention. And if anybody ever calls me that, I'll look at them like they talking to a goddamn stranger.
Dude, I don't even know your middle name.
Luckily, even on my ID, it's just an initial.
I was like, I'm not even asking you for it, just to be clear.
I got
clear.
You.
It just dawned on me. I was like, granted, I wonder how many, I'm thinking in my life, like people I've met later in life, how many middle names I actually know. The number's really low. I hadn't really like fully thought about this, but I don't know nobody's middle name no more.
Did we stop that at a certain point?
Nah, I just don't really like, it has to come up.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And it just kind of gets to a place where it doesn't come up. Like, think about this now. All your friends from coming up, you know their middle names.
Yes.
Right? If you met them after someone received a diploma,
no.
Do you know their middle name?
Nope. Nope. Like, we have a mutual friend in a group chat, and he puts his middle initial on his, you know.
Yes.
I think I know his middle name. Not that I think
know
of-
I know his middle name.
Okay.
And I only know his middle name because, like, he talks about what people in his family call him, and it's a, like, hybridized form of the first name and the middle name.
Ah, gotcha. Now, those names are a lot more common.
Well, hold on. They're from Arkansas, so this is actually country on a level that I did not expect.
Oh, Arkansas?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
I mean, we can say this. We talk about Joe from Missouri City. Right. And he knows exactly what I'm talking about. Like, I ain't going to put it out there necessarily because I don't know if he wanted everybody calling him that. But the first time he said it, I was like, oh, y'all country. And I didn't mean that as no shade. Right. I was just like, oh, y'all country. Like, my mom was people country where all the girls go by first and middle.
That sounds about right. My dad is people are from Mobile, Alabama. Country with a K.
Let me tell you, them boys down there might be country with a K for the reason, the LA reason. These days. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They bang it everywhere, baby. They bang it everywhere. Well, actually, I don't know if that's how they bang it down there. Like, I would imagine they do a more Chicago banging. Because, like, Mississippi, Memphis, they do Chicago banging. Those sets are the ones that get down there. But I would not be surprised if I got down to Mobile or somebody, like, called them, as a rapper, called themselves country something with a K.
And then you know where NABJ is supposed to be this year, correct?
Yeah, you guys have fun. You guys have fun. NABJ's at the National Association of Black Journalists Convention is in Birmingham this year. And let me tell you, when my bougie comes out, I don't know nothing about no connecting flights no more.
I'm surprised. I didn't even realize, I wasn't even sure that Birmingham had an airport.
There's actually a historically interesting story that people tell, and I don't know exactly how true this is, but I think it was Delta. For them, it was coming down to whether or not to make their hub Birmingham or Atlanta. And that changed everything. Like, they went with Atlanta, but there was, you know, you'll hear people talk about that Birmingham's airport could have been Atlanta's airport. Now, I don't think that actually could have been true because Birmingham was never the size and magnitude of Atlanta in the first place. But you'll hear people say that.
Not way on the subject, because I had to fly through Atlanta a lot of times for the finals. When you want to talk about an eclectic set of human beings, go to Jackson Hartsfield and you will see a little bit of everybody in America there.
Hartsfield is the most just interesting airport to go through for a number of reasons, right? First of all, and by the way, we'll be talking NBA soon. obviously, it is the largest airport in the world. It does the most traffic in the world. So you got all these different people that are coming through. So you got that part. It is also in the blackity blackest city in America, right? Like, I don't want to try to say that. This is how I put it, right? It's the most African-American city.
There we go. That's better.
Right? Because, like, Kinshasa is certainly bigger, right? Imagine there are cities in Brazil that have more black people. All of this, yes, but it ain't Atlanta. Atlanta is the most African-American city in the world. I remember once we had Tom Arnold on Highly Questionable. And this is one of these moments when I was doing Highly Questionable that, like, I ain't think that much about being the only black person really in the operation that much until stuff like this happened. So I don't watch these films, but I came to understand that Tom Arnold found himself a niche as the white man in Tyler Perry movies. If you look up like Tom Arnold on the IMDb, you will see Tom Arnold in a lot of Tyler Perry movies, which is totally fascinating to me, right? Because I know enough about, generally speaking, white people's viewing habits, but really they ain't. Not only are they not watching Tyler Perry stuff, I ain't even saying nothing to them about it. Ain't nobody asking you to come, right? Tyler Perry. Tyler Perry's whole motto should be, it ain't about y'all this time, right? It's about eight different y'alls that it ain't about, but it ain't about y'all, and white people are involved in it. So I wondered if Tom Arnold's people have ever seen any of this stuff that he been in. Like, I wonder about that white police officer on Snowfall. Do your friends even know this TV show that you've been on for six seasons?
No.
You know, like, have they even heard of it? This man, he could walk into all these black people places and be well known, right? He walking into Hollywood bars and they asking him like, so are you looking for an application? Right? They got no idea the work that he has done, because white people just don't typically come across to what we doing like that. So I wanted to talk to Tom Arnold just about that phenomenon, especially because he's like, you know, really famous.
Right.
You know, for those of you who are a bit younger, when he was married to Roseanne was super duper famous, and he parlayed that himself and all that. But anyway, I asked him about, you know, the doing the Tyler Perry movies, and I didn't get a chance to really get into it because I wanted to get into it, but Dan was kind of feeling left out, you know, and so he was the, like, he can't understand why this could be, like, really funny to get into.
Right.
So I asked Tom Arnold about it, and he said to me, I tell you, it sure comes in handy when I'm going through the Atlanta airport. And that was like the realest thing I'd ever heard. The demographic for Tyler Perry's straight to DVD or whatever movies, they work at the airport in Atlanta. That is them. Like, Is there a single white person who works at the airport in Atlanta? I don't mean as a manager or as somebody who got a job like in the executive class at Delta or one of these airlines. I mean working at the airport.
No, yes. There's a young, would you say young hip white kid who worked there?
There was?
I'm asking.
I don't know. Like, all I'm saying is,
I'm just thinking of an archetype.
Yeah, I ain't had no white person scan my ID. I ain't had no white person go through my carry-on. I certainly ain't had one serve me no food or give me a magazine.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I can't think of a single, I'm thinking of gate agents. I'm thinking of people at the lobby shops. I can't think of one.
Can't think of what? And let me tell you a big part of why. If you white in Atlanta, that airport will commute.
You got to be staying in it to be close to that airport.
Yeah, like it still's the white people in College Park. Don't get me wrong, but they ain't working at the airport.
That's true. Oh yeah, there's a former NBA player story I would have to tell you about being in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. It's a play the music thing, but we can hit that later.
That actually brought me to an interesting thought. And we'll get, like, people been talking the NBA finals to death. We'll get to that part. But I did want to get to something basketball related, because somewhat significant happened on Monday that we talked about going into it, but I didn't see that many people talking about on the back end, which is Udonis Haslam played his last NBA game. I understand that the word play is doing a lot of work there, but you know what I mean. Played the game. Had thought about Udonis Haslam. Very curious your thoughts here. And I was watching the podcast he did. I think it was with The Pivot, with Ryan Clark and Fred Taylor and Channing Crowder. But it was one of those, right, mm-hmm. in that mm-hmm. wing. And he was talking about how he earns the equity that he gets with the guys on the Heat, right? Like, I just ain't out here screaming at people if people go for it. And a big part of what he does is he's like, I'm going to show you around Miami. Like, this is my city. You know, he's one of those people that, and Miami is small enough because quietly, and people don't get this, the Denver metropolitan area has more television sets than the Miami metropolitan area. Like, it's really just not that big of an area. People like it, okay? And one of the things he talked about was, you know, when the cats come to town, you know, he take them around. He show them around Miami, right? Which I think also left unspoken, probably also involves introductions to, shall we say, some very influential people.
Absolutely.
Who can help you just in case you get into a bind. You know, I imagine that's part of the Udonis Haslam, I'm going to take you around Miami.
Oh, I think that's the whole thing. Because if you go there to visit, you know certain places to visit. But when you go there to live, you have to be reintroduced to a certain element.
It's kind of sort of the only Miami to show you around. Because the other Miami you can find yourself. But on that one, yes, I would like for UD to be the one to show me around. In fact, in retrospect, because Dan introduced me to Udonis when I first got down there. But we just had a moment to talk very quickly. In retrospect, I kind of wish I had reached out. I just like to see the tour. Roll with UD. I bet that tour would be fun as hell, right? Like, I'd just be curious to see the city. But anyway.
And you'd be safe.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's not like a Miami thing. You know, the thing you said about Miami, which is the thing I said about Chicago.
You live by the water or you live in fear.
Yeah. So if you kicking it with UD and you nowhere near the water.
Yeah, you're good.
Secret Service.
You're good. But because it's the NBA and all these things that go along with it, obviously you have the picture in your mind of who's taking the tour with UD and who's the person that needs to know the people and everything else, right? I'm putting a free story out here for all you guys who cover the NBA and all you guys who are in South Florida, right? I'm giving y'all game right now because I don't really have the bandwidth to do it necessarily, okay? And I actually could think of a way to do it that'd be better than whatever y'all did, so it wouldn't matter. But I'm going to give you the basic idea. Did Duncan Robinson get the tour?
Yes.
I want to know Duncan Robinson's impressions of getting the tour. Because I'm going to tell you this about when I first got to Miami. Now, Miami is one of these tricky cities where the neighborhood changes immediately. Mm-hmm. Like, there isn't a gradient to, like, this neighborhood is this way. There's a neighborhood, call it 500 whatevers away. That's completely different. Right. The neighborhood at 250 is not necessarily the midway point. Right?
It just changes. Yeah, it just changes.
You cross one street and all of a sudden it's like, whoo, boy, Baltimore is like that. But when you cross that street in Baltimore, it's like the whole side of town turns into that. Miami, not so much. You could get out of it eight blocks later, right?
Right.
It's a little different. But a quirk about Miami is, I mean, you know this, you lived in New York. New York got East 125th Street and West 125th Street, but they're the same street. It's just about where you are on the street. If right. you in Atlanta and you on Insert Street here, like call it Peachtree. That'd be a decent example here.
Yes.
It might be Peachtree to say Northeast. It might be Peachtree and it say Northwest, but it's still Peachtree. But in Miami, Northwest 2nd Street and Northeast 2nd Street or whatever, they're not the same.
No.
They're different.
It's everything there is so weird.
Yes. So if you make the turn on Northwest thinking it's the same as that Northeast, it is not. And that is a lesson I learned the hard way my first day driving home from work in Hialeah back to wherever I was staying. That was downtown. I forget which one I thought it was, but I made that turn. And I know it wasn't the same city, but I made that turn and I'm looking around and I'm like, you a pippa chizza, you got your black on fire. Whoa, whoa. Hey. This doesn't look anything like the Opera Tower. That's where I'm trying to go. Whoa.
You turned up in the Noya?
Dude, I turned up and I had that happen in New Orleans once actually for real. And it was the Noya. And I was like, oh, okay, let's get back out of here. But we made this turn and, you know, the CeeLo line, you know, I wanted the gate was put up to keep crime out and keep our ass in. Hey, man, that whole part of the neighborhood was set up like when you get to the upper level boards on Pac-Man where you run away from the ghost and you be making the turns and then you realize you've just turned yourself into a corner. There's nowhere else for you to go. You know what I mean? There's no outlet.
Yes.
That's what was cracking in that neighborhood. Man, I was out there on some Dukes of Hazzard, Starsky and Hutch, trying to get that thing going this way, get that thing going that way, get myself up out of there. Because I was like, I know this is not. I've spent enough time in my travels to know this ain't the place for me to go. It could be that place, right? So, like, I want to know what the tour is like for Duncan Robinson. Or has anybody been more excited about the tour than Tyler Hero?
Well, Tyler Hero got radicalized at Kentucky, right?
Apparently, yes.
Yeah, so he has zero clue. Now, Duncan Robinson, if I remember, is from the Boston, Massachusetts, like sort of metropolitan area. Yeah. He probably thought, man, I've been around mean people before. I grew up in Boston. Like, this ain't a big deal. But of course, UD, I'll take the tour with you. I don't know what I'm getting into. But yeah, UD is like, yeah. Just keep your mouth shut. That's one of them things. Keep your mouth shut.
I bet when UD take him on the tour, he ain't even telling where we going. Practice over. He's like, yo, get in. What I tell you? Come on, man. Get in the car, man. You good. Just get in.
Where are we going, Mr. Haslam? Where are we going, sir?
Nah, he ain't asking nothing. He just getting in. UD just start talking to him about, asking him about himself, right? Because he seems like that guy, right? Like, he seems like the Mark Messier archetype of team captain. Like, I get to know you. You know, mm-hmm. I do. Because I think there's a real value in that, you know, in the setup they got. And I think it's going to be interesting when he's gone, how that holds up. Because the one thing about that Heat culture thing, it's easy to make that Heat culture land with the Gabe Vincents of the world. Right.
Yes.
With
yes.
these cats that's just trying to stick around in the NBA. Not yes. that these dudes don't respect it, not that they don't like the results, not that they don't try to find guys that are inclined. I mean, they got Dion Waiters to come around on their program, right? They do that. However, it was a little harder to get Michael Beasley on board now, wasn't it?
Hassan Whiteside. Like there's a documentary to be done about the post LeBron Miami Heat when they were just trying to find their way. Remember that press release from Pat Riley about Luol Deng being the most important free agent signing in the history of the organization after LeBron left? Like, they were floundering and they were just taking a whole bunch of chances on a whole bunch of dudes that would not fly with the Miami Heat right now, except it flew with the Miami Heat maybe about 6 or 7 years ago.
Yo, but keep in mind, and this is important, it's not just LeBron leaving. It's Chris Bosh.
Yeah.
Right? Like, all at once, LeBron left, Dwayne Wade fell off a cliff, and Chris Bosh couldn't play basketball anymore. That was in a span of, what, a year and a half?
I don't even know if it's a year and a half. Because remember, Chris Bosh didn't play that full season.
That's right.
14-15. He had the blood clot, I want to say, right after the All-Star break. So maybe he played 45, 50 games or somewhere around there.
Yeah. I mean, it all flipped just that fast. And credit to Pat Riley, man. He ain't burning this down. I'm going to find a way. I'm going to get some dudes in here. We're going to switch this here and there. And while they haven't been great, even these two finals teams, neither of them have been great. Right. They ain't been bad. And they've never been, like, really uninteresting.
No. Even this year, when we thought that sort of the magic had been gone, right? You're in the play-in and everything else. Like, they're still compelling to watch because you're trying to see if they're going to figure it out. And I remember seeing our buddy Jimmy towards the end of the season, and they were trending towards the play-in, and they were watching, like, they were scoreboard watching. I think it was Brooklyn. Brooklyn won the game, and that pushed Miami further into the play-in. And I was like, well, guess I'm not going to see you again this year. Jimmy says to me, see you in June. And when's the next time I saw Jimmy? May 30th. You know what I'm saying? And he had nothing left. But just getting there and with that team, like you said, whether it's Spoelstra, Pat Riley, the Heat coach, like, we all make fun of it. But, dude, you got all these tryhards, and they put it together and made that stuff work. Like, you got an undersized center in Bam who's not as tall. Like, we think every center is 7 feet tall. Mm-hmm. Bam is closer to 6'8" than he is 7 feet when it comes down to it. You know what I mean? Like, they have really made some stuff work. And I'm very curious, Bo, to see how they make this summer work.
Yo, my favorite thing about Heat culture is we always talk about, like, it's always the best when a team reflects the city it plays in. It's not what we got here, guys. That's not. Not that there are no hardworking people in Miami. Because there are hardworking people in Miami. I want to be very clear about that. I don't want to, just as J.A. always says about L.A., somebody cleaning those swimming pools. You know what I mean? Like, there are hardworking people in Miami. But there are more not hardworking people in Miami than there are in any other city in America by percentage. In fact, maybe even by absolute number. And I think Miami got like 300,000 people in Miami proper. I'm just telling you, it's more people not working in Miami, but not drawing unemployment. Well, at least not drawing unemployment legally. But there's more people not working in Miami or putting all their work into how to not work. That's all them scammers are. Working hard as hell trying not to work, right?
That's what I was going to say. They working hard at something.
Yeah, they working hard at not working. It's the wildest thing, right? That basketball team don't look like that. That basketball team outside of that zone, ain't no scamming going on, dog. It's grinding. And the city loves them because they grind. I'm like, you are the least self-aware people in the world.
They think they work hard. Here's the thing. Here's the question, because you believe zone are for cowards.
Yeah.
What did you make of the Miami zone?
Sure did run up against a wall, didn't it?
Well, here's the thing. And we said this before the series in one of our unrecorded podcasts. The one guy you probably can't really zone up against is that dude in the middle of the floor who has eyes literally like everywhere. That man is like a ring camera. He's got he's got the back porch, the front porch, the side. He's got all of that. that's the one guy, that might be the one guy in the NBA over the past 25 years that you can't zone up on.
Yeah, they had no chance at that, right? And like, so the argument that you could make about Miami and running the zone in particular this year, and I guess it's applied most of the last few years, they don't have size, right? Mm-hmm. And so if Bam is going to be your rim protector, your inside guy or whatever it is, maybe this is what you have to do. I felt like they had too many guys that I would think of as being good defensive players to feel like they needed to do this zone all the time. But it would like throw people off. And like, it wasn't like it was clamping people up, right? Like you just wouldn't, you didn't, I never felt like I was watching that zone and people weren't getting good shots. I felt like they were getting good shots even when that zone is at its best and people just weren't making them. Like, you tell me if I'm tripping.
No, I think what happened was it gummed up the movement. It made Denver's shooters who were used to coming off pin downs, coming off screens, it made them stationary.
Yeah.
And if you're catching and shooting and your blood is flowing, like, that's one thing. But if you're just standing, I just think it made them think an extra beat. And, Denver won the series and everything else, right? And it's no shade to them. But, man, they had some lemon booty moments throughout the finals. It was just in the finals because it didn't happen against L.A. and it didn't really happen against Denver. And they had one of the more dominant runs since playoff expansion to seven games in the first round. I can only think of the 17 Warriors, not as the better team, but as a more dominant playoff team. So it's no shade at all. But that zone just seemed to make them clam up. Everybody but Jokic. Like, Jamal Murray had a couple moments where he was a little indecisive. Michael Porter Jr. couldn't find a game until he decided to do his best Curly Neal imitation in the fourth quarter of game five. You know what I mean? Like, everybody seemed to just clam up, and it gave Miami just a little bit more life in games that they should have been blown out in.
By the way, 2014 Spurs and 2011 Mavericks are probably the other two examples that we can point to. And the 2011 Mavericks require hindsight because I don't think we felt like it at the time. And then we looked up and they did what we thought was the impossible. Though, again, another one that in retrospect makes perfect sense, them winning those 2011 finals. The Nuggets are interesting because, yes, I do think they would have a lemon booty moments, but they also had moments like game two. They lost it at the end, but they roared back with like 2 minutes left. They walked them down. And I seen that happen a few times. They did that in a game against Minnesota. They did that in a game against Phoenix where they just walked them down at the end. They didn't win those games, though, but they just walked them down at the end. And I think what became very interesting about Denver to me as it went, and, I mean, there's no real new Jokic terrain, so now people are going to all-time great place, and I'm like, calm down. Let's chill out about that. We don't need to do that right now. There's no need to get in that hurry. Just enjoy and appreciate the moment. But what I felt like he did in the finals that was important was he played really well defensively in shutting down drives to the paint. Right? You're not going to get blocks out of him, really. That's not going to be the game because that he's like, jumping is a waste of energy. But he did the best I think we've ever seen at just playing positional defense and making this happen within the context of the scheme they run, right?
Right.
But he did that job. And then once he did that job, man, you can't beat them.
Well, here's the thing for me. He has really quick hands.
Yes.
Which when you think about it and you think about the passes and everything else, of course he's got quick hands. But defensively, when he's swatting down, he rarely gets, like, skin. You know what I mean? Like, he would do stuff. Bo, do you know how many times he, like, kicked the ball?
Yes.
You know what I mean? I don't know how many times he kicked it, and, yes, it reset the shot clock and everything else, but it just gums up your rhythm. You know what I mean? Whatever movement you got going, he knows where the ball is going because by game three, everybody knows what everybody's running. Ain't no surprises by then, but he just did just enough to make himself big. This dude is 280 pounds. Like, yeah, I'm gonna plant myself between the paint and the rim. You're not going to bowl over me. You might be able to jump over me, but the Heat don't have athletes like that. So he did just enough with the game plan to make things really, really, really difficult. Now, here's a question I have for you, I'm curious about this. If you swap Bam Adebayo for Joel Embiid, how does a series like that turn out?
It isn't a sweep. I mean, Bam, that's a size issue, right? Like I said, Bam looked like he tried to fold a fitted sheet. Like, it's just a, that's a, that, that,
hey,
that.
Hey, that's a battle I lost last night.
You know, like, that would be a tough go. This would be the thing, though, about Embiid. The Nuggets still win that series. And a big part of why the Nuggets still win that series is Joel Embiid could not bully that big man. And when the bully factor goes away from him and that option isn't there, the thing that gets lost about Embiid in the postseason and why he seems to be a much different player than he is in the regular season. In the regular season, that dude is using like 38% of the possessions. In the postseason, he's using 28% of the possessions. That is a giant dip. For those of you who are unfamiliar, usage rate is how many possessions end with you either taking a shot or making the turnover, right? You are the final person in that possession.
Right.
Embiid is at the top of the league normally in that number. Like LeBron James in most seasons, when it's coming in around like 31, 32 in the regular season, and then taking it to the mid to high 30s in the postseason when it was time for him to actually take over. Embiid's goes in the opposite direction. He's taking fewer of those shots. I think, A, part of that's about conditioning, but two, part of that is you're not getting those foul calls. So maybe one thing he could do is tire Jokic out, because Jokic has to work a little bit more. But I don't think Embiid can stop him.
No. No, I mean, here's the crazy thing. And of course, we've had this conversation before. Maybe Dwight Howard and Tim Duncan.
Yeah.
The only two guys who are big enough, strong enough, quick enough, and defensively inclined. And since the era of us watching basketball.
Let's not forget about Olajuwon.
But remember, but is a lot. Would Olajuwon be tall enough?
Olajuwon would not be tall enough, but Olajuwon was also not tall enough to guard any of his contemporaries. Yet somehow he found a way.
And he's mean.
So
and
mean.
Mean takes you a long way.
Let me tell you.
When you're playing that.
He and Jokic would end up fighting at some point.
Wait. Remember, young Akeem with the A.
Woo! Oh, yeah, Akeem with the A. All the chill temper. Came. Yeah, the chill has an H in it. There's no H
who
in Akeem.
I feel like he slapped somebody in the face.
He did, I want to say.
Was it Jim Peterson or something?
No, Jim Peterson played with him.
Okay.
I want to say it was somebody for the Jazz, I believe, and I don't remember what he did, but it was very similar with a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar punch Ken Benson in the face. Olajuwon just out of nowhere gave him the swing. Like, so my brother's got a partner who used to get courtside seats during when the Rockets were performing superstar malpractice from Olajuwon from 87 to 93. Like, that is actually it's the 87 through 94 through 95 until they got Clyde. Like, yes. The best player that Hakeem Olajuwon played with after Ralph Sampson was finished was Otis Thorpe, who they got in the Ralph Sampson trade. Like, they never had anybody better. Olajuwon asked for – here's how cold Olajuwon is, just so you know. Olajuwon asked for a trade, and the owner told him, you can call me whatever you want, but I got tickets to sell. Didn't get him anybody, but they did hire Rudy T, which proved to be the difference. But Olajuwon asked for the trade. They didn't get him anybody, and he still won a title.
That's, I mean, when we talk about, shall we say, some of the most magical jobs that the league has produced, Olajuwon in 94.
Yeah.
Vern, like, you got to babysit Vern, yes. Right? You got a rookie Robert Horry. You got Kenny Smith.
Hold on. A rookie Robert Horry that you traded, but they brought their receipt back. Oh, you know, the Rockets had to bring their receipt back on Sean Elliott. And the trade got rescinded, and you had to figure it out.
And you had to figure out. And then big hands, Otis Thorpe, right? Yes. Like a power forward, if there ever was a power forward. And then rookie Sam Cassell. And you go through a better Phoenix team in 94 than they were in 93, if you really think about it. And you go through
Stockton and Malone.
Stockton and Malone. Well, Karl Malone and James Harden have very similar playoff.
Fair. Hey, but James Harden ain't been to the finals twice.
That's true. That is true. And who did they beat in the conference finals? They beat Utah in the conference finals.
They beat
finals,
Utah, right? In the conference finals. They were down 2-0 to Phoenix in the first round, lost the first two games at home, and then won the series in seven.
Wasn't that the Choke City headline or
Choke
something like
City
that?
Was the, Choke City was the headline of the Houston Post after they lost game two. Clutch City was the headline after they won game seven, and Clutch City became the defining term of the era.
Like, I don't know. It would be like if Jokic went through, well, I guess we can say Jokic did kind of go through Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, he,
Anthony Davis.
No, when you really stop and think about where people could say, you know, who did he play against or whatever, in terms of one run for a center, Rudy Gobert is one of the great defensive players of his time.
Yes.
Right? Like, he's not a bum. And right. He went through Rudy Gobert. DeAndre Ayton, okay, it's a little complicated, right? But he's not some dude that you just drag off the street.
Right.
Anthony Davis played really well.
Lunch meat.
Went through him. Food. Bam. Food. He was food. He went through legitimate people in order to get to this. Because Anthony Davis was giving it to him in 2020. Let us not forget.
Yeah, because Anthony Davis was hitting jump shots.
That's right.
And Anthony Davis arguably, I'm going to say he's played the most consistent basketball on both ends of the floor, considering the stakes.
Yes.
When you consider what he did against Golden State, would you consider what he did against Memphis, would you consider what he was trying to do against Jokic, and it did not matter. Like, you go through stages of grief.
Yeah.
As an NBA superstar, when you're guarding against a guy that you can't do nothing with, and that's Olajuwon. Like, that's like David Robinson and Olajuwon. It is the denial. Like, nah, he ain't doing this to me. I mean, let me push up on him a little bit more. Let me take his airspace. And then it goes to, did he just body me? Did he just put me in the rim? Yes, AD, he put his shoulder into you and you buckled. And then the final stage is where he hits a step back jumper on you with the buzzer. And all you can do is laugh.
Shake your head. Just be like, that's the thing about Jokic that for me, you don't see cats doing that when Steph hit them shots. You know what I'm saying? Like, these, and I'm not saying that is anything bad about Steph. I'm just saying these dudes are looking at Jokic and saying, I'm literally doing everything humanly possible, right? Like, Jokic is rendering dudes helpless in a much different way, where it's not like I can't think of what to do, I can't come up with anything. No, I'm doing everything humanly possible. And I'm this close. This close. And this dude just put this three right here in my eye. There's what?
You know what I call this? And some of the older heads during the finals told me that I was they said young fella. They did the young fella put their arm around me sort of thing. I said, hey, is this guy like international reparations for Arvydas Sabonis' Achilles? Like, if Arvydas Sabonis was supposed to come to the league like 5 years sooner, like, is this what we were going to see? And they said Sabonis was better. I can't imagine a world, Bo, where Sabonis would be better than this.
This is my only question when people say this. Every time I hear this come up about Sabonis. Can we all be honest, guys? How much Iron Curtain basketball were you watching? You know what I'm saying? Like, how much, every time I hear somebody say this about Sabonis, outside of the 88 gold medal game, when they were playing against, I mean, I guess it was David Robinson. You were playing against a team full of kids by and large. I'm just asking, how much Sabonis were people, who else were you watching? In the Russian league, right? Or wherever the hell it was that he was playing. Like, maybe people are going and doing the YouTube thing, and I'm not saying they're wrong. I just have a hard time believing that Katz was really watching that much Sabonis. Now, maybe you can extrapolate from what the giant, slower version of Sabonis was that we got in the NBA, who was still really, really good, right? But what was interesting about that version of Sabonis, which is something that, this is where I give Denver the credit on the way that they handle Jokic. This Jokic thing only works if you give him the keys.
Yep.
Right? Like, you can't just make him a secondary player and this thing works, which to me is an advancement in the idea of the point forward. Because we can say Jokic is a center, which is not untrue. And maybe Bill Walton fits a similar archetype. Bill Russell to a lesser degree of like the high post center who you run the offense through. But in the end, he's playing according to the idea of the point forward that we've had. Like a bigger Derek McKee, a bigger Larry Bird. But very rarely is the point forward, Larry Bird being an example, rarely is the point forward the centerpiece guy. He's like a secondary playmaker, and it's cool to have. This dude is the center of everything.
Not only that, and it's 2 points I want to make because I don't want to lose it. Isaiah Thomas, maybe about 8 or 9 years ago, like on one of those open court episodes that they used to do on NBA TV, it was really good. They said, what would a Magic Johnson be in today's game? And this was in 2014. And Isaiah said he wouldn't be a point guard. He'd be a power forward. Mm-hmm. He said he would be doing everything that he did, except he'd be doing it from the four. He'd be doing it from the high post. And I'd be damned if that ain't what Nikola Jokic is doing.
Yeah. By the way, let's not forget that Magic only played point guard for like 6-7 years.
Yeah, no, after 84, 83?
Yeah.
When Norm Nixon left?
When they traded Norm Nixon for Byron Scott. That was when the move made. Otherwise, he was playing two, which is kind of crazy.
Dude, let's appreciate the fact that after Magic won two titles, we bring in James Worthy with a number one pick. Then you bring in Byron Scott as a number four pick, I want to say, out of Arizona State. Mm-hmm. Adding that already to Jabbar and Magic. That is magic work.
Jabbar, who was good, like really good, all the way through 86.
Yep.
Really. Well, you go back and look at that era of the NBA, and man, it was amazing the magic ways that players just wound up on the Lakers or Celtics. And not in a way that I'm saying was rigged. It just be some old, wow, we made this trade for Roy Henson. What do you know? That became the number one pick, and now it's James Worthy.
All of that. Like, the way that Larry Bird, and you hit the school minutes, because I almost forgot. Larry Bird's rookie year was not the classic Celtics. That was not Mikhail and Parrish.
No.
That was some other dudes.
Yeah, that year where Larry Bird took them from like 25 wins to 60 wins or something crazy
like
that.
It was like 29 to 61. Yeah.
Yeah, it was the next year that Mikhail and Parrish showed up. And let me tell you something about Robert Parrish while I'm thinking about it. I had been thinking that the cop on Jokic to a degree was Robert Parrish. And in the sense that Robert Parrish figured out, I ain't really got to use no more energy than is absolutely necessary. I don't have to do all this running and jumping. Like, sometimes you run, sometimes you jump. But if you ain't got to, don't do it, right? Then I went to YouTube and was like, hey, let me pull up some Robert Parrish highlights. I'd never watched a Robert Parrish highlight video because I realized my only context of Robert Parrish is old Robert Parrish.
Yep.
Only to find out that younger Robert Parrish looked a lot younger. I mean, in the face, he looked the same. But younger Robert Parrish was a bit more of a runner and a jumper than I understood.
He had them quick, one-handed sort of reach-around dunks. Like, he was running the break. And I'm not talking about grainy footage Robert Parrish. I'm talking about 1992 Robert Parrish running around giving those young boys some work. How are you beating me up on one end of the floor and then beating me down the floor for a dunk? You got to pick one or the other, brother. And he was doing both.
Yeah, Doc, I misunderstood. Like, the colossal unfairness of Bird, McHale, and Parrish. You really go back and look at that, because Larry Bird was playing power. Like Magic wasn't playing point guard. Bird wasn't playing small forward for like the first 4 years. It went until what, they traded Cornbread out of there.
This one to Maxwell, yeah.
Yeah, once they got Maxwell out of there, then he goes to small forward. But Bird, McHale, and Parrish, 6'9", 6'10", 7 feet, all of them legitimate Hall of Fame caliber players. Just not fair. I pulled up some Kevin McHale clips the other day.
Oh, crap.
That also had to be an incredibly frustrating endeavor, trying to figure out what to do with this dude.
Because here's the thing. He wasn't going to pass it, right?
Yeah.
You didn't – like, I don't think we appreciate in this spread floor era how much work guys did in phone booths.
Yes.
Like whatever move that was going to be done, it was going to be done in this little two-step. Like, I can't dance, Bo. Right? I'm not a dancer, maybe, but the most I can do is a two-step, like that best man hustle black folks know what I'm talking about. Like, that's the most that I can do. When it comes down to the dip and the spin and all that, that's where you start to lose a brother a little bit. Imagine what it's like guarding Kevin McHale, and you know I am in this little bit of space. All I got to do is just stay with him. All I got to do is stay with him. Bounce, bounce. Stay with him. Bounce, bounce. Bop. Where the f*** did he go?
Right. Left hand layup.
And now he's grabbing the towel, wiping his sweaty ass face, because I fouled him. Yeah. That's why. I didn't realize that I fouled him, but I slapped down because I didn't realize that the two-step bounce went somewhere. It went to the dip, and I thought I hit the dip. Tweet.
And didn't they say he smelled bad?
Well, he had them underarms.
Yeah, look that up. I think he had a rep for smelling bad. I mean,
that might have been a planned out strategic advantage
to
get Bill Laimbeer off of you.
Could be. And them white boys was talking crazy to you, man. That's the other part of it too. They said Kevin McHale was out there. They said he gave his moves names.
The slippery eel.
The slippery eel. That was the one. He's like, all right, here comes the slippery eel. Can you imagine how frustrated your black ass would have to be? This old smelly Frankenstein looking white dude just told you he about to hit you with the slippery eel, and then he does it.
Like, imagine being big, strong Kevin Willis, right?
Yes.
In that game seven in the Garden, and Neat going off, and Bird going off, and you got to guard this dude, and I'm big and strong, and he's saying, here comes Michigan State.
Yes.
You're like, he calls you by your school name or something like that. Here comes Jerry Curl. Can you imagine what he calling? And you know Kevin Willis, big head, right?
Yeah.
Here come Forehead.
Right. Imagine what he said to Michael Cage.
Oh, gosh.
West Memphis, Arkansas's own Michael Cage.
Okay, makes sense now.
Yeah. Oh, no. Once you know that Michael Cage is from West Memphis, Arkansas, which is a town I don't even think you knew existed until I just said it.
No. But
West Memphis, Arkansas. That's the town. People from Memphis talk about how country the people from West Memphis are. People from Memphis talk about how country the people from West Memphis are.
Wait, hold on. And now that I think about it, Bo, how frustrated do you have to be if Kevin McHale talking shit, then Larry Bird talking shit,
yes,
then Danny Ainge talking shit.
And that's the one I was about to get to right there. Quietly, one of the most underrated athletes of his time, Danny Ainge.
Drafted in three sports, right?
I think he was drafted in two, but I think he had like a lot of scholarship offers in football.
Okay.
But, I mean, he played Major League Baseball.
He was with the Blue Jays, right?
Yes. Okay. Played Major League Baseball. And like an Angel tell you, he was like, I could touch the top of the square. Like, he was not out here gritting it up on the athletic courts. He was Danny Ainge. And that's why Tree Rollins tried to bite his finger off.
Man bites tree.
Tree bites man. Tree bites man. That's what it was. Tree bites man. Tree bites man. Like, and Danny Ainge's reputation is so bad that I was well into my 30s before I realized that Tree Rollins tried to bite Danny Ainge's finger off and not vice versa. Because trying to bite your finger off seemed like something Danny Ainge would try to do. I kind of have to admit, I thought Tree was above it, but I guess that Danny Ainge just brought him to that place. Riley still hate Danny Ainge to this day.
Tell Danny Ainge to mind his own effing business or something like that. No, in Detroit, and this is like how crazy my stupid memory is. In Detroit, there were shirts made up called "I Hate Danny Ainge," right? When he played for the Celtics, this is where it gets funny. Danny Ainge gets traded from Boston. I want to say to Sacramento
for Joe Klein.
What a move, Red. Right. So
it's like, what go out, what gotta come back in?
don't matter which one of y'all. We taking one of y'all. So Detroit has a shirt during the playoff series against the Celtics. It says, "I still hate Danny Ainge. He's gone." And the shirt said, "Still." That's how much we hated all those dudes.
Yo, well, here's the thing that's wild about it though, is people didn't really hate McHale and Bert. Danny Ainge was the only one that came off like a dookie, right?
Yes.
Bill Laimbeer, white people also hated Bill Laimbeer and Danny Ainge.
Yes. Well, here's the thing. I don't know a world where, I mean, this is what the Detroit in me comes out. Black people here didn't hate Bill Laimbeer. We just knew he was hateable.
See, that's the thing. That was he was y'all's. He was y'all's. I cannot imagine how much Detroit would have hated Bill Laimbeer. Like, was Bill Laimbeer like this when he played for the Cavs?
I think so.
Like, did you have to kind of swallow it like the Bulls fans had to swallow it when they got Dennis Rodman?
look, the Bulls employed a man named Bill Cartwright. They had zero space to talk about somebody else's
but Dennis Rodman was doing it to them. You know what I'm saying? Like, they had to swallow. He threw Scottie Pippen in the front row of the photographers.
Scottie said something that he shouldn't have said.
I can believe that. I can. Boy, you think Scottie gonna download that podcast?
I think I'd have put it like this. Scottie is such a tortured soul. He would.
For those of you who don't know, Scottie Pippen's ex-wife is doing a podcast with Michael Jordan's middle child, his son Marcus. Some of you may be hearing this and wondering, what connection do they have for them to be doing a podcast? It can't just be that they know each other from basketball, and it probably isn't.
Now, what was the question that you, what's the question that initially pops up in your head when you see all of this stuff going on? It's two words, followed by a question mark.
How's Juanita? Question mark. That's the person I want to know about. Like, people always put this into context of Mike, and I mean, I imagine it's a little weird for him, but I want to know what Juanita think about all this. Like, what happens when you, Marcus Jordan, and you bring her to your mama's house? How that work?
I got an even curiouser question. You are the middle child, which means you got a younger sister and an older brother. How is this being discussed in the sibling group chat?
Whew, that's a very, very, very...
Because you're talking amongst peers at that point, and you have a very tight relationship with your brother. Y'all can say just about anything to each other.
Yeah, and I mean, and this is the thing, and we always have to be a little careful on how these things go, because we've seen this formula work out very well for somebody else. But, like, she used to kick it with Future. Typically not something you want people to lead with when talking about this. But, again, it's worked out pretty well for Russell Wilson. That was the best thing that ever happened to him, was that girl that used to kick it with Future.
An amazing thing that I don't know if it came up during the finals. They would not put that man on the Jumbotron.
Really?
Not that I saw.
You know what, though? That would be risky. That would be really risky. They were putting him on the TV broadcast.
Okay, yeah, I figured that.
But it would be really risky. Like, I think that's actually a very smart play on their part. That would be really risky.
They put the former quarterback on the Jumbotron.
Yeah, that's
who was also Bo in the courtside club behind the you know, all that stuff, wearing one of those chains.
Yeah, I saw them on the broadcast with the chain.
Did they show? Though. Okay, cool. I was just,
oh, you know they wasn't missing no chances. So Peyton Manning and no big ass gold chain. They wasn't missing that chance at all. Let me ask you this. I know we're getting late in this, but I bet Peyton Manning could hoop.
I bet you, to put it like this, who wins between Peyton and Eli?
Hooping? Peyton.
Is Peyton just ornery enough?
Yeah, so he cares in a different way, right? Like, I don't think Eli cares about losing a football game. I don't think Eli tripping on losing a basketball game. I think Peyton Manning's tripping on losing anything. The thing you got to remember is Peyton Manning is like the tallest great quarterback ever. Like, he's the legit 6'5", 6'6".
Yep.
There's no way that Peyton Manning enjoys watching basketball as much as he does if he can't hoop.
That's a great. Well, here's the thing. He's the dude that if he's playing against Cooper and Eli and the score is 19 and we going to 21.
Yes.
There is no layups.
No. There's all kinds of cheating.
There's no jump shots.
No. And if it's a game that allows for foul calls, he's calling every single one.
Oh, he's the police.
Yes. He's totally.
Have you ever heard the story of Magic Johnson playing when Magic were playing like the little gyms and
stuff?
Oh, yeah.
They say the game never ends because Magic just start calling every foul.
Magic 5-0. You be going down the other end because Magic done missed the layup or something like that. And he'd be like, hey, man, I called a foul. Magic, the game over. No, I called a foul. Check that back up. what you going to do when Magic Johnson in Magic Johnson's L.A., right? And he tells you, or you in UCLA, and Magic say, hey, man, check up. Magic, I didn't touch you. You had an uncontested lift. Check up. Man, I'm just taking my shoes off. Check up. Hey. All right, man. Come on, dog. Check, man. Tie the shoes. Tie your shoes up, man. Put the shoes back on. You gonna tell Magic Johnson no in L.A.?
Hey, right fast before we get out of here, what day the NBA waiting on? Is it going to be after 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon?
I think it's going to be a Friday.
That they're going to tell us about this Ja Morant suspension.
I'll put it like this. If you set the over-under at 35, I'm taking the under.
I'm taking the under.
If I had to guess, high-end being 30, more practically being 25.
Yeah, I think it'll be quarter season, so like 2021.
I mean, and you can still have Ja Morant back by Christmas.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're right, because they start the season a lot earlier, all of that stuff. Yeah, no, I think that's what it's going to wind up being. I'm curious what they say they found out. Remember when I told y'all on this podcast that what if his excuse was going to be something so ridiculous that you wouldn't believe it, and then the next day people got wind that there was an excuse floating out there that was super ridiculous? To which I say, listen to me now, believe me later on. And I appreciate that so many of y'all believed me when I said that in the first place. And once it came back around, you were like, damn, you wasn't lying.
There's a postscript to that, right? You do realize yes. that, right? The postscript is, and I'm not giving the game away, but the postscript is, that really wasn't a gun. I mean, that was something else. All right, send it to us. We got an office down there. Just send it to us. Oh, man, you know, somebody took it. It's gone. It's gone. We can find it. Just send it to us. Ah, man, I don't know what that thing is. Nah. All right.
You can't prove that's a gun. I kind of guess you're right. But the fact that you have to explain it is the problem. It doesn't matter if it's really a gun. You was acting like it's a gun. And that's the...
After the Harlem Knights gun the first time.
Yes.
The Harlem Knights gun.
You could have convinced me that that wasn't a gun.
That looked like a keychain.
Yeah, that's what I say. You could have convinced me that that wasn't a gun. This time, you, that's a tough sell, buddy.
Imagine you being in Ja's board of advisors and the league's about to call. All right, Ja, what you going to say? All right, y'all, I'm going to say, because it was Instagram Live and it was a quick movement, I'm going to say it was not a gun. What y'all think? Good answer. Yeah. Good answer, like Family Feud.
Only time somebody came up with a worse lie, and this person was under much tighter circumstances.
Your boy Bobby?
Was much greater. No, not him, but much greater stakes involved. This is when the brain trust of Jason Williams and the Harlem Globetrotters were like, and I think it was all Jason Williams, but we're going to say that he tried to shoot himself with this shotgun. Not a sawed-off shotgun, guys. A full-on shotgun. He did it to himself in front of everybody. They'll believe that.
I forgot he wrote that out. I thought you were going to the Bobby Petrino Book of Lies.
Oh, no. Let me tell you. His lies unraveled, but he was this close. Like, he almost made it. This lie here is just a horribly and terribly implausible lie. Where Bobby Petrino, what his lie couldn't overcome was, so why she was on that motorcycle? Right? Like his lie could not overcome the game and all of our fundamental understandings of the game. That's what he couldn't overcome. This right here was just like, bruh, this is not gonna get you through.
25 games. Yeah. Anybody tack on 5 for you being so stupid.
Yeah, and let me tell you this, man. If there's anything about the Nuggets that Grizzlies need to look at, and I hate that we went so far because there's a couple of things I wanted to bring up. Although I may have to have you next week because it looks like next week guess ain't coming. A, we thought Denver was the next thing. I mean, the Grizzlies were the next thing. No, it was Denver that was the next thing. And when you look at the Grizzlies, they are way far behind that. And they're going to really need to get their whole situation in check, like, soon, right? Yep. And you know what? We just may run a little late today because I feel like bringing this up here.
Yep.
We'll try to get to this quick, right? Jokes aside, are you surprised that the Pelicans have put it out there that they're trying to get the number three pick, given that we all know the only way that they could get the number three pick is by trading Zion Williams?
I saw Willie Green during the clinching game of the NBA Finals. He was with Herb Jones and Brandon Ingram. You know who wasn't there? Mr. Burberry shirt at the baby shower. He wasn't around there. So, no, I'm not at this point with that extension kicking in. And maybe they know something about Mr. Williamson's body that we don't know, that maybe it can hold up for the start of the season, but it can't hold up beyond it. Like, I don't know if that's the best. I don't know if it's a good bet to necessarily trade him, but I'm a little bit surprised. I guess you would rather trade him early than late. And if you can get a guy like Scoot and you believe Scoot is a guy that's going to be bankable, I guess you do it now. Because remember, the Pelicans were really good in December.
Yeah, they were leading the Western Conference with him. They were really good, and that's why I don't fail on this. I think if I'm doing this, it's manipulative. But if I'm Griffin, I'm convincing people that I'm thinking about this. Just try to put fear of God in this boy, and then we go from there. Because this is the thing about Zion to me, and why I would not trade him this offseason. This is the moment of truth for him in every way. He is being publicly embarrassed based on his personal life. His basketball reputation is as low as it could be. His teammates do not think very much of him and have lost respect for him in the course of the last year, right? And this is even mm-hmm. after them seeing how good they could be with him. Mm-hmm. All of it is here, right here, directly in your face. If you don't get on your grind now, it's never going to happen, right? Every you got to grow up thing is right here, directly in front of you. You got to grow up. That's it, period.
But like you said, well, like we said about Jobin in a different way, is this rock bottom for Ja? I mean, for Zion. Is this rock bottom for him?
I mean, let me tell you, it would feel like rock bottom to me. And I will also say this too, man. Keep his daddy away from the microphone. You see where his daddy came out there to talk about this? I stand by my son. Dog, ain't nobody sending your son to jail. He just got caught slipping.
That's it.
Yeah, why are you even doing this? When I was a child, I spoke as a child, and then you with that Bible kick, and I'm like, "Hey, man,
this ain't it."
Yeah, I don't even know what you're trying to say right now.
That was just so weird. And did you notice that Zion kept his head down the entire time? Like I told this fool, don't say nothing. Man, this fool talking again.
Dog,
but. It's dumb. But, Bo, here's a question I want to ask you because I don't know how well it played after the end of the finals. Michael Malone kept talking about we going to be back here next year and a year after and all that. And I'm like, bruh, enjoy the moment because we didn't have five new champions in the last 5 years.
You're right.
I don't know if we have dynasty or, you know what I mean, that I get the ambition of it.
But he the only one out of those champions the last 5 years, and you tell me if I'm missing somebody, he the only one out of those champions the last 5 years that was not depending on a player over 30.
21 bucks, I mean.
I would argue they were depending on Brooke Lopez.
Okay.
I mean, look at the importance of Brooke Lopez at every turn with that,
right?
The closest to that with the Nuggets is Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. They are in a position where there's a window that's there. Now, the Bucks obviously had that same thing, but I think Mike Budenholzer is the coach to hire if you want to win 65 games. He is not the coach to hire if you want to win 16, right?
True.
And so you're right. I think that's a lot for them to go on, but I see why he feels that confident. And I also want to say, now that you bring it up about Mike Malone, no better photograph than the Jokic boys throwing him up in the air and him smiling like a child.
Look, did you see the Jokic brother picking up Jokic he was a child?
Yes, that told me everything I needed to know because I didn't realize how much older they were than him. Like, the oldest Jokic brother is, I want to say, my age. Right in there. Like, they're in their mid-40s. Like, he is the baby brother. Like, I didn't really grasp how much he is the baby brother. And when Jokic, I was like, yo, does any of this make you happy? And then he got with his brothers. And then, like, them big old Cock Diesel tattooed up dudes, they crying, picking. Like, what an interesting moment that Jokic allowed himself to be picked up by all these people and just hug his big brother.
Did you say allowed?
No,
I don't think you really had a choice.
No other choice. But no, Jokic's like, yo, man, I'm trying to get back to Serbia. That's the thing about Jokic is this America thing just really does not impress him. He tried to get back to the shack.
He's trying to get back to his horses.
Yes.
And get back to his off-season regimen, which is drinking lots of beer in all likelihood. Because I saw the locker room and my very expensive jacket bow got drenched with cheap, not drenched, but it did not escape the champagne.
But I bet that was fun though, boy.
Oh, I was on my way out of the locker room and then a player grabbed me and he said, man, it's been 13 years, man. 13 years. I'm like, yeah, man, congratulations. I'm about to walk out. And next thing you know, you heard the pop of champagne. And you're like, my jacket, all of this.
Yeah.
My fine linens.
Yeah.
But it was fun. But, dude, it's never.
You should have thought of that.
Huh?
You should have thought of that.
I should have. Dude, it's so weird to see these dudes with such unbridled enthusiasm.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In the locker room, like, it's all like they're exhausted, they're tired, they stank, they funky, but they are happy. Like Jeff Green in there.
Yes.
Like old ass Jeff Green that done played on more teams than a 15-year-old AAU travel kid. You know what I mean? And yet he out here crying like a they in the locker room crying like a baby.
Yep.
That's some amazing stuff to see, man.
And on the other hand, nothing sadder and more awkward than the they just lost locker room. Ooh, you just want to get in and get out.
I didn't go in there.
Yeah. give me the printout. Give me the printout. I don't need to get no unique quotes. This ain't how I'm gonna set myself apart.
No, we straight. see you on the podium. See you later. See you September.
Hey, man, that is Vinny Goodwill. Check out the Good Word podcast, available wherever it is that you get your podcast. My man, I greatly appreciate you.
Hey, glad to be here, dog.
All right, man. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. Dan Stancic, Parker Owens, and Adi Khan handle everything behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Also, thank you guys for watching on YouTube. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us. Review us. Give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.